So we met kind of by accident. One of my friends from high school went to Georgetown, which is where Sarah went to college. And I think during orientation, he was just like walking around campus and he saw someone and he thought it was me. And he went up to her and then realized it wasn't. And I think he asked if he could take your picture. And you were like, yeah, okay, like, I guess. He said something about like, oh, like, you look like one of my friends or whatever. And obviously, you know, coming from a Caucasian male, this sounds a little bit racist. You know, it sounds like, oh, you know, all Asians look alike. You look like my Asian friend, like crazy, right? And he has since told me that until we found out that we were actually related, he was like, oh, like, maybe I'm super, like, racist, like, unintentionally. Like, he had, like, all this anxiety about it. So he was, like, kind of relieved to find out we were actually related. But yeah, so he took her picture and he sent it to me and like some of our other friends from high school. And it was kind of a running joke for a while. I was like, wow, she like really looks like you. That's so crazy. Like, haha, you have a twin at Georgetown. Like, blah, 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 blah. And that was sort of how it stayed for a while. I think that was, yeah, so that was orientation in, of our first year of college. That would have been sort of the late summer, autumn of 2010. And then I think it was about that time 2 years later. I think it was like it was like October of our junior year. I don't know. I had this realization where I was like, wait, like, I kind of want to know more. Like, I had this picture of this girl who looked basically exactly like me. That was really weird. So I asked my friend if he could, like, you know, if he happened to know her name and if he could, like, you know, or find out or something. So he like texted me her name and I looked it up, I guess on Facebook, and you had like, I don't know if you still have these, actually I haven't checked because we're friends on Facebook now, but like the privacy settings were set so you couldn't actually like friend request, you could only message, I think. And so I was like, crap, like this is going to be harder than I thought. So I sent a message through like Facebook Messenger and it was, I think I said something along the lines of like, hi, this is super awkward. But, you know, I noticed that we like look a lot alike. And since I'm adopted, I like don't really know anything about, you know, my birth family. Like, I'm just kind of curious what your story is. And obviously because her last name is Heath, like not a standard Chinese name, I was like, okay, there's a pretty good shot this girl's adopted too. Or else it's just really weird. And then I didn't get a response. Nothing. And I later found out, I guess you were in China and not really on Facebook. And neither of us, I think, still are really on Facebook that much anyway. But at the time, I was like, oh, no, like, maybe she thinks I'm insane. Like, maybe I'm being racist. Like, I don't know what's going on. You know, like, maybe I'm crazy. And then, so another 2 years passed. So it was late summer again. It was August 2014. So we just graduated from college. And I was taking a break after graduating. I'd had a short internship and then I was traveling just, you know, before like officially entering the working world and never being able to leave again. And I happened to be in Germany in my hotel room. So I was on the Wi-Fi. And I got a Facebook message and I was like, oh my God, no way, no way. And Sarah had finally messaged me back and basically she was like, sorry, like I only just got this message because, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but we talked about this later once we figured it out. If someone you're not friends with on Facebook messages you, it goes into like the weird like other in like messaging inbox. And so you never actually see those messages ever unless you specifically look for them. And obviously if you're not expecting someone to message you, you're not going to go looking for those. In particular, if you're not really on Facebook in general, or if, you know, you're somewhere like China, which is where Sarah had been a lot, where you can't use Facebook. So I get this message. I'm like sitting on the floor in my hotel room in Germany. And I'm like, oh my God, wait, okay, so she is adopted too. This is insane. So I think I messaged back like, okay, like that's crazy. So where are you from? And, you know, and we were from the same city. We're like, okay, that's like way too weird. And then we're like, okay, like when's your birthday? Okay, so we don't actually have the same recorded birthday. Mine's in December and hers is November, but that's pretty darn close. And so sort of like the plot thing, and we were both just sort of like laughing, like, okay, this is really weird, like what do we do? And so she told me, you know, I know like we're only just talking like for the first time ever, but maybe we should Skype. And I was like, yeah, we should totally Skype, except right now I'm in Germany and I can't, but I'll be back, you know. I think I was gonna be flying back to the States in like 3 or 4 days. I was like, can you wait? And she's like, okay, but I'm actually moving to China like really soon, so you need to tell me when you get back. So finally get back from Germany, like immediately, like when I get back, I think I, you know, sent off a message, okay, I'm back, like let's find time to Skype. We set a time to Skype. I was like super nervous. Like I did not know what it was going to be like, and I'm sure you can talk about this too in a second, but it was just like, oh no, like this is going to be weird. You know, obviously, you know, I told my parents, and they were really like kind of weirded out but excited too, and we're all just kind of like, what is this whole experience? Like what's going on? And so we Skyped, and it was bizarre to say the least. I mean, just first of all, you don't meet too many like other adoptees unless you like specifically go looking, of course. And so it's always interesting to meet someone, but I'd never met anyone from the same city before. All of my friends who are adoptees are from other places. So that in and of itself was like super exciting and cool. Regardless of whether or not, you know, we were going to end up being related or not. We hadn't gotten that far at that point. But we Skyped. It was super awkward. We actually, we talked about the fact that it was kind of like setting yourself up on like a blind date. Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to go like talk to this person that I don't really know, but like kind of feel like I might have a connection with. Wow, it was so awkward. I think we were like, so, what do you like to do? And like, you know, what's your favorite color? You know, really bad, like, you know,
first date.
Right. And then I guess sort of toward the end of the conversation, you said, you sort of reiterated that you were moving to China, but this was right before, this was like a week or two before Labor Day weekend, right? It was like 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah,
I think it was two weeks. And so Sarah said, hey, you know, I'm going to be in DC packing up my stuff before I leave. Would you want to come down and maybe we could like get dinner, because, you know, it's not that far from New York. It's not that hard to get there. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll think about it. Like, I don't know why I hesitated so much. I guess it just seemed like it was just like a blur. And so after like a little bit of dithering, I was like, what am I doing? Like, I should just go. I had no Labor Day weekend plans. My parents were going away. Like, I was literally just going to be like sitting at home by myself watching like television or something. And so I, you know, I got a bus ticket. I booked a hostel. I went down there, you know, did some touristy stuff, and we got dinner. We met at the train station because that was like a pretty easy place to meet. And it was a lot like the Skype call. It was a little weird. It was very funny. We were sort of joking, like, you know, I wonder what the servers think about this. You know, we look so much alike. Like, do they just assume we're related? Like, I don't know. And we really bonded over the fact that we both like to eat. I think at that point you were moving like 2 days later. Yeah, 2 days. So we met, had dinner, and then we're like, "Okay, bye." And then Sarah moved to Beijing for like 6 months, and yeah. So then we weren't really in touch, hardly at all. I think there might have been like an email or two, but really it was kind of like back to sort of silence, radio silence. However, we got our mothers in touch, like, via email, and they started, you know, like, bonding and all kinds of stuff that I have no idea really what they were talking about. And so they organized that when Sarah got back from working in China, that she and her mom would come visit me and my family, and you know, just to spend some time together. But also, we decided that we were going to get a DNA test because it just seemed like, you know, the natural thing to do. And yeah, so she came to visit when she got back. It was like right after you got back too. Like, did you? I don't even think, did you go home?
No. Okay. I flew into DC, and then my mom took the train into DC, and then we both took the bus up to New York.
So, like, literally right when she got back from being, like, abroad for, like, you know, half a year, comes directly here. And I went and got them from the bus station, which was interesting. I mean, again, it was, like, you know, almost like meeting again for the first time, just because we'd had so little contact. And, you know, meeting her mother was, you know, kind of emotional and things like that. So we got to spend some time together, and we went to get the DNA test, which, of course, of all places, was in Chinatown. Which
was so sketchy.
It was a little bit sketchy. It was, like, you know, in this tiny, tiny doctor's office, like, on, like, the fourth floor or whatever, you know. And, oh, man. It was really great, actually, that Sarah's, like, you know, conversational and in Mandarin. Because I don't speak, like, any, and they didn't speak a lot of English. So there was a lot of me being like, can you come over here and talk to them? Because I don't know what I'm doing. So it was a very basic, like, cheek swab type test. But we opted for the twin test as opposed to just a general relationship test because I guess that's really what we were curious about, just, like, looking so much alike. And then we waited for the results. And, yeah, in the meantime, I guess we just sort of hung out, got dinner. Sarah came to my office one day before we were getting dinner, freaked out some of my coworkers. It was pretty funny. They still talk about that sometimes. And then we got the results.
Well, your dad came home finally.
Oh, right. That's right. My father had been on a business trip, and he'd been gone this whole time. So he wasn't there for the test day, just our moms. And yeah, so he came home, and then the results arrived, I think that day even. And we opened them and kind of didn't know what they said.
That's so true.
Because
there were too many double negatives.
It was, you know, for, I guess, statistical reasons and, like, not
legal
be
reasons,
possibly. It was like the likelihood that, you know, the two individuals are not something is probably whatever.
Random number with, like, lots and lots of, like, strings of, like, digits after the decimal, mm-hmm, and percent.
Anyway, it took a little while for us to really parse through, like, what it said. I think the most prominent thing that we gathered from the results when we first looked at it was that we were Asian, which we already knew. Yeah. But that was confirmed.
And both female.
Yeah, amazingly. And, yeah, so according to that test result, it would appear, despite all the double negatives, that we are, in fact, twins. And, you know, we sort of had semi-visual confirmation of that. But having, you know, the actual cheek swab test for that was big deal. And just kind of surreal in a way. Like, I know for me, I think I would have been more weirded out if it had turned out we weren't twins at that point, just because we do look so much alike, and we're from the same city, and we're adopted from the same place, you know, or orphanage. And actually, they worked, I think it was through the same, it was the same U.S. adoption agency, too, which is crazy. I mean, it's like Wonderland. I mean, just like farther and farther down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add? I mean, I guess from my perspective, I think Selena did an awesome job explaining kind of what happened. From my perspective, to jump back in the story to when I first got her Facebook message, it was very random. It was just one of my friends had posted on Facebook, you know, hey, what's this other folder in your Facebook inbox? And I was like, what? I don't even know what that is. So I was like Googling, like, what is your other folder in the Facebook inbox? And then it was like, oh, like if you open your inbox in Facebook, you can find this other folder. And I was like, I guess I'll look at that because, you know, I was on break as well because we'd both graduated. And so I was like, I'm sitting, I think I was actually sitting at church, and I was like, oh, well, I'll open it. Like, I guess, you know, whatever. And I opened it, and then it was all just, like, spam from, like, random pages I'd liked. Like, hey, discount for this store or something, something. And I was like, okay, this is useless. So it's, like, your spam folder. Great. And then I was like, glad to know Facebook has that, too. They can spam you anyway. They can get in touch with you. But then the first message, the one that was at the very top, was from Selena. But at the time, the name didn't mean anything to me. I was just like, who is this person? And then I realized that the date was from, like, 2 years before. And I was like, hopefully that wasn't important. Like, don't know what this is. So I like opened it. Actually, I'm gonna be honest. When I first looked at it, I was like, can people like, you know how like they always say like you get an email from someone you don't know and you're like personally email, you shouldn't open it because it could be a virus or something. And I like sat there for a while being like, can they send you a virus through your Facebook inbox? Like, I don't know. Like maybe they can, but I was like, probably not. No, but it's worth the risk. I'll just open it anyway. I mean, I won't click anything, you know. If there's any links, I just won't click them. And so I opened it, and I got the message from her saying, you know, that she had a classmate from high school who saw me on campus. And at this point, I had totally forgotten about freshman year because you meet so many people during orientation who vaguely look alike and who think you look like other people that it's just, you know, it's like there's hundreds and hundreds of people that you're meeting as a freshman, and at this point as a junior or as a senior, we'd graduated, I guess, at that point. So it's like I'm not thinking about like when I first got to Georgetown. So I didn't even recall that at all. And so I like read her message and I was like she said, I was like, oh my goodness, like I'm so sorry. I wasn't ignoring you for like 2 years. I just or you know, whatever. And so I responded, and then we kind of figured out we were from the same place. We were born at the same time. But what was interesting was when all this happened, I think for me it was kind of like it wasn't a super emotional, like, experience, and I think Selena agrees. It was more just like because you're not expecting anything like this to ever happen in life. So you're sitting there being like, wait, what? Like, is this a joke? Am I being, like, punked? Like, you know, is someone going to jump out and be like, you're in candid camera? Like, you know, like, no one's expecting that. And so I called my mom. I was like, hey, Mom, you'll never believe what happened today. I'm, like, telling her about this. I was like, you know, and at this point, we weren't Facebook friends. And she had really high privacy settings on her Facebook account as well. Yeah. So neither of us could see each other's pictures. We could only see the profile. And yeah. At the time, I think we both had rather stylized like profile, so it was I mean, at least when I looked at her profile, I didn't immediately think, oh my god, she looks like me. I thought, well, there's this Asian girl, like, okay, so you know, she's Asian, I'm Asian, that's great. Like, she looks like she could be Chinese, so you know, maybe we could be related. But then I was asking my mom because I vaguely recollected that she had stayed in touch with some of the other families when she had gone to adopt me, and I didn't know, you know, if there was a way she could get in touch with the adoption agency. So I called my mom and she had said, you know, that the adoption agency that she had gone through, which incidentally was the same one that Selena's parents went through, has now closed. So since we've been adopted, it no longer, you know, exists. And, but then she told me that she had something she could look through because way back in the day, I guess, right, because we are part of the first wave and you know, there was this guy, and I'm not sure if he was an adopted parent himself or if he just had a deep interest in adoption, but he had started this directory of families who had adopted from, I guess, where we were from. And so as families adopted from there, he got their, like, address and, like, their contact information. And I just kept – and just, like, made this directory. And I guess – I don't know how – if there were multiple editions. I don't know much about it. But my mom had one from way back, like, I guess not too long after we'd been adopted. So when I found out Selena's name, I was like, can you look her up and see if she's in there? Just, you know, out of curiosity and see. She looks her up. She's in there. She's from New York, which is where – she said she was from. I was like, all right. So, well, because, you know, it seems legit. No, I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I definitely had friends who were like, oh, my goodness, like, don't give these people money. Like, whatever. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, they could want money from you. And I'm like, what are you talking? Like, I'm not giving anyone money. Like, it's
not a Nigerian prince.
Like, you know, the English in her Facebook message seemed pretty legit. Like, you know, no, but. You know, a lot of people were, like, convinced that there was something devious going on, like, with this. And I was like, well, if they're trying to, like, get something from me, they picked the wrong person because I don't have a lot of money. So, you know, they're like, I was like, clearly they didn't do their research very well if this is, like, a prank. And so, yeah, so then before we Skyped, actually, I friend requested Selena. Mm-hmm. And then she accepted while she was still in Germany. And so... of course, the first thing you do is start going look through the pictures, of course, because, you know, I was confused because for someone to mistake, you know, me for her, I was like, we must look somewhat alike or like, you know, I mean, I know a lot of Asian people who I kind of look like, but I was like, for someone to have the guts, I guess, to like go up to someone and be like, hey, you look just like my friend, like, you know, there's got to be something more there. So I start going through her pictures, and I'm like, I guess we kind of look alike, you know, like, I guess in that one picture we kind of looked alike, but then you keep going, and then you're like, oh, snap, like, some of these pictures, we look exactly alike, like, I've taken a picture making that same face, like, or, you know, just, like, doing that same activity, and, you know, some of them, I was like, if I didn't know it wasn't me, I would have thought it was me, except I'd never, you know, been to that particular place or worn that particular outfit, but like other than that, like, looks like me. And so I sent a couple of the pictures to my mom and I was like, so, you know, there it is. And I started showing some of my friends and they were like, oh my goodness, like, this is weird, like, la la. And so, yeah, and then we had dinner and it was definitely, like Selena said, it was definitely that weird, like, first date kind of experience, you know, it's like, oh, we were like talking online and then we Skyped and now we're having dinner together, you know, and then it was like, oh, and then it was funny because when I came back, then we joked about it too. It's like, now we're meeting the parents, like, you know, like we're going through all the stations, yeah. But in a very quite rapid succession without having really had a lot of time to get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And then I honestly think it was weirder for our parents,
yeah,
than it was for us.
I agree.
I mean, when I told people the story, I had people like cry, yeah. Yeah. And people I didn't even know, yes. Cry, yeah. And like my like relatives were like telling people their friends were like freaking out, and we were both very like calm about it, mm-hmm. Just like, well, you know, this is interesting. didn't think this would ever happen, but here it is, so. Yeah, I mean, I think our parents, because I asked my mom, I was like, when we were coming up to New York, I was like, so how are you feeling about this? And she was like, she was really excited about it. Like, and I think for her, like, she wanted it to be like a thing even more than I think I wanted it to be a thing. Although maybe it was just because, I mean, I can't say it was more shocking for me than it was for her, because I think it was shocking for all of us. But she thought it was like a really big deal in the sense that for my mom, you know, I grew up as an only child. Selena also grew up as an only child. And so having never had siblings, I think that was something that my mom, an experience that my mom was really excited that I could potentially have. Also because with Chinese adoptions, and I may be less so now than before, but especially like, I guess, our generation of adoptees, we have no information whatsoever for the most part about anything. I mean, all we know is what is in our paperwork, and whether or not that's true or not is, you know, who knows? The odds are not necessarily the best. I mean, it's like you're thinking about China like almost 25 years ago, and like, you know, and so for her it was like, wow, there's like this connection that we never thought I would ever have to like my past. Because, you know, I mean, I have friends who've gone and tried to find their birth parents, and then I actually know a girl who did, and you know, her story's been told in Somewhere Between, in that film. But you know, it's not something that I ever, I think, growing up was incredibly passionate about, like, pursuing. It was something that I was always open to, but I wasn't like dead set on like, I have to like go back and I have to try to find like my biological family. I was, you know, really happy living my life here. And so it was very unexpected in that sense, but also I think less emotional for me. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Sort of growing up, I think, especially as a first waiver, like you sort of learn very quickly that there is no information. And I think that at a very young age, I knew that. And obviously, you know, I was really happy with my parents and like my life and not really too concerned about like anything that had happened before. I think also just having been adopted at such a young age, you know, as what, like a 1-year-old, like it's not like you remember anything prior to being adopted. So you don't really, I guess, or at least I never felt like I'd really left that much behind. But sort of, yeah, knowing that there is so little information out there, I'd pretty much closed myself off to, like, ever thinking I'd meet anyone I was related to or, like, my birth parents. Like, obviously, there have been people who have been successful, like your friend, but it's just so unlikely. And, you know, it's something that if I had more to go on, I might try, but it just never seemed like anything really worth, I don't know, getting worked up about.
I want to just go back for a minute. You learned that there might be this other person out there, right? You learned this, and you contacted Selena. And this was in 2010?
She contacted you.
Right, in 2012.
2 years after he first saw her.
Right? Okay.
She responded 2 years after that, so that was 2014.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm interested in this. I'm interested in the timing here. When this person approached you, was there anything about this was there any part of you that just didn't want to deal with this? Like, was it just like, did you think maybe I have a sister out there? Or did you think this is just too weird, I'm not going to deal with it? Like, it took 4 years. And I'm just wondering whether there was a part of either of you that kind of didn't want to deal with it. Or was it more the logistics of your life were moving along, you were in the present, and just didn't seem like an immediate thing to be anxious about? Do you see what I'm asking?
I think for me, I mean, it obviously took 2 years before I even tried to contact Sarah. It just sort of like I've said before about just accepting at, I think, such a young age that you're never going to meet anyone you're like blood related to. Like, even though the sort of proof was right there in the picture, you know, it just sort of felt like a weird coincidence. Like, I guess on some level, like, I didn't even think that it could be possible that we were actually be related, because what are the chances of that happening? Looking back, though, and just being adopted, like, I'm sort of surprised. I wasn't more like, huh, that's very interesting. I should look into that, you know? That wasn't my first instinct, though. It was just sort of like, ha, huh, that's hilarious. She does, wow, she really does look like me, you know? And so, yeah, just, I think that, you know, my first sort of initial, like, that's really weird, kind of funny reaction lasted for a while. And then it wasn't until, again, 2 years later that I was like, wait, hold on. Like, that was really, like, uncanny. Like, the resemblance was a little bit too much there. Like, I should dig into this. And, you know, my friend who originally taken the picture, and a couple of our other friends had been joking for a while at that point, like, hey, maybe you should like track her down and get a DNA test. And I was like, yeah, like that'd be so funny. Like, you know, I have a friend who works in a lab, like maybe he could do it. You know, like one of my friends was studying, you know, biology in college, you know. And it was like half true, but like mostly still joking. And then I was like, wait, that's actually not a half bad idea. And that was sort of when I was like, okay, I need to get her name. And I asked my friend and, you know, he told me. And we've later since figured out that, like, I know someone else who was at Georgetown that you actually know. And there's just, it's been sort of this weird less than 6 degrees of separation ever since. One of your coworkers went to summer camp with me. It's again, that rabbit hole, like, it's been crazy.
and we should say here that Sarah, you grew up in Tennessee, in Nashville, and you grew up in Manhattan. So it's even more of a kind of, so for you, Selena, it sounds like it was more, it just seemed unreal. It didn't seem possible that this could actually be a connection. So your head didn't go there for quite a while. And how about you? I know it's sat in the infamous, mythical, odd outpost of the other box on Facebook.
I think for me, it was just funny because when I finally did get her message, because I think for me as well, it never occurred to me that, I mean, it occurred to me, oh, of course, because I'm adopted, that theoretically, like out there somewhere in the universe, like I could have a sibling. But then I think what made it weird was the fact that, you know, we are twins. And so, you know, when she started talking to me, I was like, oh, I mean, same thing. It was very interesting. Like, oh, I've never met anyone else who's from the same city as me. Like, that's interesting. But then as we started messaging and we were like, oh, but our birthdays are really close. And, oh, like, we were adopted around the same time and, like, things like that. And then finally, you know, seeing the pictures, I think that was when it really hit me. It was finally seeing the pictures and being like, oh, we could actually, like, this could be a real thing. But then, of course, as we've said before, the timing was just, like, we have really bad timing, I guess, because, you know, the two-year thing. And then it's like, oh, we finally, like, connect for real. And it's like, oh, bye. Like, I'm going to China. I'll see you in, like, half a year. And then throughout that time while I was there, you know, I know our moms were, like, trying to figure out, like, how are we going to do this? Like, we got to figure out, like, where we're going to get the DNA test and da-da-da-da-da. And I was just kind of like, you know, in China, where then while I was there, they shut down Gmail. So then I couldn't even, like, message people, really, because I couldn't either use Facebook either. So then I was like, well, I guess, you know, I'll just wait it out until I come back. I think it was also a little strange for us, too, when my mom and I did first come to New York, because we were staying in their house, and, like, at that time, we didn't know for sure. Of course, everyone was saying, like, it's gotta be, like, there's no way it's not. Like, you guys are just too similar, and, like, I know we were constantly doing things to weird our parents out, because one of us, you know, they'd ask a question, and we'd both respond, same answer, same way, or, like, you know, they'd, I know my mom still sometimes when she's talking to Selena gets weirded out because she's like, but she answered me the same way you do with the same expression and mannerisms. And I know when I first walked into their kitchen when her dad had gotten home, but I didn't know that at the time. So I walk into the kitchen and they're like, oh, yeah, like you should meet, you know, her dad. And he was just kind of like, hi. So I'm sure, I mean, again, for them, I'm sure it's definitely weird still. I mean, less so for us, I guess, because for us, it's as much as we like know we're twins and sisters, like I think it's more like making a friend. It's making a friend you just happen to be incredibly alike. But for them, as parents, and since we're not parents, like I can't speak to that experience, but I'm sure for them, that's like really bizarre because it's like, oh, like I raised this child for 20 odd years and now, oh, look, there's another one, like who is eerily similar despite the fact that they didn't grow up together. And so
tell me if I'm right about this. It doesn't sound like either one of you was really overwhelmed with a crisis about your identity as young girls or adolescents? Did either one of you seriously consider a birth parent search or no? You're both nodding your head no. What were you told about the adoption? What was the story that you heard from your parents about why they decided to adopt and how each of you came to enter the family? What did your mom tell you about being adopted?
Well, my mom, so I grew up in a single parent household. So my mom had always wanted to have children, but obviously she wasn't married. And so she was looking into other, ways to, you know, I guess she may have considered foster care, that kind of thing. But at the time, adopting internationally was not really, really done. But for whatever reason, and she was like considering, you know, how she was going to go about the adoption process, I guess she found out, you know, that, you know, China was an option. And so after considering it, I'm sure praying about it, that's what she felt like she was supposed to do. So that's how she kind of went about the process. And then I'm trying to think, I guess what I was told growing up was, honestly, we didn't talk about it a lot growing up. It wasn't something that I think needed to be said. I mean, obviously, I mean, my mom is Caucasian, so, you know, it becomes readily apparent that, you know, we are not necessarily biologically related, you know, pretty early on. You, like, recognize, oh, wait, like, my friend's parents look like, you know, like, I see, like, how my friends kind of look like their parents, and I don't, so, you know. And of course, I think I grew up, I had books on adoption, like, there's many children's books out there on adoption, and more now, for sure. So I'm sure I read those and things like that. But honestly, it wasn't even something I considered. I grew up in a very, I guess, Caucasian-heavy community. So race wasn't even really something that I thought a lot about growing up. And my friend, it wasn't something that would come up even with my friends. Like, people didn't – it just wasn't discussed because – you know, I was pretty much one of the only people who wasn't white at the school I went to. And so even though my mom did try to introduce me to, you know, Chinese culture through, like, families with children from China and things like that, that never seemed to be, like, something that I personally thought was, like, super important. Like, I appreciated it because I was like, I recognized that I was Chinese and therefore, like, I was obviously proud to be that, but it wasn't like something that I felt like, oh my goodness, like, this is like my identity and I needed to, like, hold on to it, like, incredibly strongly. It was just like, this is a part of who I am, and but I'm also, you know, American, and I do what all the other people my age do. I go to school and hang out with my friends, and it wasn't like a super, like, intense thing for me until, I guess, high school, when I went to China for the first time. And after coming back, that was when I decided I wanted to learn Mandarin, and thus kind of fueled my decision to be a Chinese major in college. But it wasn't with the intention of going back and looking for my biological family. It was more for my own kind of wanting to understand more of the culture that could have been my life that wasn't. And just, I don't know. I think it's been interesting. I think people assume certain things. I'm sure part of it was out of a need to conform to the expectations, probably, that people have. People always assume, oh, because you don't look a certain way, that you naturally speak Chinese fluently, or you know everything there is to know about, like, anything related to Asia. So if I ask you some obscure fact about Asia, you'll definitely know the answer. And obviously, you know, it's the same thing with math and playing the violin or any of those things that I don't do. It was very much just for me, I think, knowing that one day I did want to go back to China, but again, not for the sake of, like, finding my biological family, but more so just for my own interest. I think, China is an up-and-coming, you know, superpower, I think, in our modern world. And,
you know, Mandarin's a valuable language to know. There's a lot of people coming here who speak it. And for me, it was kind of like a why not? Like, why not try to learn it? Why not, like, explore this other part of my history?
It doesn't sound like you went through a big crisis of identity either.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. It comes up again and again, you know, despite the fact that we grew up in pretty different places and had, you know, different experience. I come from a two-parent household. Our experience has been remarkably similar. I mean, I would say that, you know, my parents also obviously were, you know, hoping for children. You know, standard methodology wasn't working out, and so they looked to other options, adoption being one of them. And at that time, as Sarah mentioned, you know, international adoption wasn't really done, and sort of at the same time that made it easier to adopt internationally. I mean, China, you know, closed its borders to adoption for a little while right after we were adopted, and like I think revamped all of their policies. And so, you know, it was actually much more difficult to adopt within the U.S. at that time, and I think that's one of the reasons that China became an option for my parents. But also, they actually had spent a lot of time in Asia. They actually met in Japan. They both lived there for an extended period of time. They lived and worked there. And so I think that, you know, adopting a baby from China sort of made sense to them in a way, just already being sort of familiar with Asian culture and, you know, having lived over there. I mean, obviously, you know, China and Japan being different, but sort of having that connection. And then sort of as to, you know, growing up adopted, I don't even remember being told I was adopted. It's just something I've always had as part of my identity. Like, I'm adopted. That's just like a thing. I don't know when they told me, if they told me really. And it's not something I feel like I've ever had a lot of, you know, angst about. I do remember, you know, similarly, like, trying to be involved with, like, families with children from China and other such groups. And I was pretty heavily involved for a while just because, you know, it having started in New York City, my parents were among the first parents to sort of join the fledgling organization. And, you know, they're friends with the people who started and things like that. It was parents of, I think, the playgroup I was in when I was little. There was a lot of, like, concern, like, you know, how are these, you know, kids going to adjust? Is it going to be harder for them growing up, you know, in school and whatever? And I think that one of the things I always found super aggravating growing up as an adoptee is that I always felt that, like, in some way there was a lot of pressure to, like, be very traumatized. Like, there's all like, oh, you must be so traumatized. Like, it's been so difficult. And I was always kind of like, no, but I'm really okay. Like, my parents love me. I love them. Like, I go to a good school and I have friends. And what's the problem exactly? And, you know, obviously every adoptee's experience is different and, you know, how they relate to their, you know, I guess, culture of origin. But for me, it was never a traumatic thing, never even really something I thought a lot about. I think also perhaps, you know, by contrast with Sarah's experience growing up in New York City with, you know, Chinatown right there and just being in, like, such a diverse place that in the same way, by not being in a diverse place, race wasn't really talked about. Because New York City is such a diverse place, race isn't really talked about. And so, you know, it never came up. And again, I don't look like my parents who are also Caucasian. Like, it was pretty obvious from the start that there was something different about our family compared to, like, my friends' families. But I did have the benefit of growing up with other adoptees. Some of my best friends to this day are also adopted from China. And so I always had that and always felt very normal, I guess, because of that. But also, you know, growing up with friends with all different kinds of backgrounds and family structures, I think just from a very young age, I was like, family means a lot of different things. And it doesn't have to be cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. And I've always been really grateful for that because I think there are a lot of people who still maybe don't realize that. And that's kind of unfortunate in my opinion. Yeah, so I do not know Mandarin, unfortunately. It's something I'm thinking about picking up, actually. Partially for personal reasons, I think it would be really nice to sort of speak the mother tongue, as it were. but also, the company I work for employs a lot of Chinese nationals because we have one of our main offices is actually in Beijing. And our CTO is Chinese, and that's why our engineering hub is over there. And so for, like, work reasons, it would be very beneficial for me to know the language just to facilitate better, you know, employee relations. And I just think it would be nice. I did go to, like, Chinese school after school when I was little for a while, and I vaguely remember it sort of. You know, I think we were, like, eating cookies and, like, trying to learn Mandarin sort of, and you know, talking about, like, Chinese culture and meditation and stuff that as a seven-year-old you really don't care about after school because really all you want to be doing is running around with your friends and not sitting down for another few hours. So I definitely remember being like, don't make me go anymore. Which, of course, I now regret. And I feel like every time I talk to anyone who tried to learn, you know, their sort of, I guess, culturally inherited language as a younger child and then stopped. Now everyone's like, yes, I totally regret not learning it then because it would have been so much easier. But I think you don't really necessarily understand that at the time.
So it's good that I'm pushing my daughter.
I
she'll thank me later.
Honestly, I think so. Although sometimes she'll like, oh, why? But I do often wish I were at least, like, moderately conversational, like, enough to order food in a restaurant or something, the important things. But I think sort of Sarah mentioned, like, there is sort of this odd conformity thing where people expect you to know it, and on some level I almost want to because people expect that. Like, I get stopped in the subway a lot by Chinese people trying to ask directions. And I was kind of have to be like, you know, miming, like, sorry, no, like, I can't help you. I, like, sorry. Like, no, I can't speak to you. And I always feel really bad because, you know, when there are French tourists who are lost, I can help them because that's what I studied in school. But and they're always very confused for the other reasons. So, yeah, it's never been, I think, a point of, like, a pain point, really.
So let me ask you, you mentioned the paperwork earlier. What's the story, Sarah, of your paperwork? Where were you left? What's that tale?
Okay, so I'm not entirely sure. I actually went back to China with a group of adoptees when I was in high school, and I've mentioned that before, but that trip was a partnership between the National Council for Adoption, which is based out of Alexandria, Virginia, and at the time, the China Center for Adoption Affairs, which is now the China Center for Adoption and Children's Welfare, something, something. I don't remember. There were too many letters in the acronym. But we all went. It was a trip of about 30 adoptees, 28 girls and 2 boys. And we ranged from 7th grade all the way through high school. So that was when I was a sophomore in high school. So I was kind of middle of the pack, as it were, in terms of age. But when we went to their office in Beijing, anyone who had been adopted post, I guess, 1992 or 93, their paperwork is in Beijing because they never get rid of the paperwork. They keep it forever. They keep all the parents' files. They keep all of the children's files. I guess I'm not entirely sure for all the reasons, but if you want to and you can arrange it, you can go and see your file. But because we had been adopted so early, our paperwork is still housed in the provincial capital of Changzhou, which is Nanjing. So they didn't have my file. They also didn't have a couple of the other girls' files because we had all been adopted very early on. So I only have, I guess, the scans of what they gave my mom way back in the day. So I've since read the scans, and now that I can read Chinese, I've read them and I've read the Chinese versions, and they're very, very basic, like nothing of note. You know, it's like, oh, like there was a child and they were dropped off at a police station. Ta-da! Like so detailed and helpful to anyone. You know, it's like the same one. And I think mine probably says, like most of them do, that there was a note saying this is when my birthday was. But obviously one of ours is wrong or they're both wrong, because if yours had a note too, someone couldn't tell time. Yeah, I mean, other than that, I don't have any other information other than since looking at the map of Changzhou as it is now, and where the orphanage was at the time. I mean, I could probably, I think it had maybe some street names in the description. I don't remember that there probably were. So if I like, I worked it out one time on a map, but I mean, China's changed so much in the last 20 years, and you know, the orphanage isn't even the same place it was back when we were adopted, and cities have changed, roads have changed, buildings have changed, like anything that's in there other than maybe the actual streets themselves, and that's assuming what's even in there is any way accurate. Not much to go on in terms of wanting to go back and explore that.
How about you, Selena? What was your abandonment narrative?
Well, I can't read the Chinese like Sarah. All I know is, yeah, it's very similar. There's just not a lot of information. I think mine said that I was left at the train station. But, you know, who knows if that's accurate. Again, given that we have different birthdays, but we're twins, clearly that documentation is faulty. I actually did have an opportunity to go back, though. I went back in 2000 with my parents and actually got to visit the orphanage, which, you know, at the time, like, was kind of scary. Not because, like, the orphanage was scary or anything, but just because, like, I was, you know, how old? That was 2000, so, like, 9 or something, or 8 or 9. And it was just really weird to go to this foreign country that I was from but had never been to. I didn't speak the language. You know, we had a translator the whole time, and I got to meet this one guy who apparently took care of me when I was at the orphanage, but like I didn't remember, so I was like, sure he did, you know, like, and but I was also really shy of strangers at that point, and especially strangers I couldn't talk to, and it was just a very, very sort of surreal experience. I remember not being willing to try the chicken feet. They freaked me out. They still kind of do, except I eat them now. But yeah, there's just not a lot of information. I mean, I think that, you know, if I had the opportunity, I would maybe be interested in trying to, you know, get some kind of appointment to see the actual files, but I honestly doubt they would provide any additional information. I mean, the thing is, though, of course, now that we know we're twins, that's a certain amount of information in and of itself, but I'm sure the records don't reflect any of that.
So has any of this led you, either of you or both of you, to wonder or theorize or daydream about what really happened? What happened? How did you get placed for international adoption? How were you separated? What are your feelings about the fact that you were separated and adopted to separate families? Has it ever made you sad or mad?
Well, I think for me, and this is something that I've tried to explain to people who hear the story and are just like mind blown and like everything about as to why perhaps we have such what other people, they're like, you're so chill about it. Like, why are you, like, this is a, like, a big deal, and you're just, like, sitting there, like, oh, and yeah, by the way, like, I found out I have a twin, you know? But I think for us, the reason, and this, what I've tried to explain to people who aren't adopted is that when you're adopted, especially under the circumstances that we were adopted, because we know nothing, it opens the door to endless possibility. And I think I've always known that. I've always wondered, I think, to a degree, wondered, like, do I have siblings? Like, what are they doing with their lives? Do I, you know, like, could I potentially one day meet them and not even realize we're related because, you know, who would know? Like, you know, and especially for me, having gone to China, like, twice now, and then, well, three times, I guess, really, but two where I could talk to people, you know, I mean, there is that potentiality that I could run into someone, work with someone, become friends with someone, and be related and not even know it. And that's something that I've, you know, I try to explain to people. You know, it's one thing for me as someone who is adopted, knowing nothing about my background, and then finding out I have a twin. It's very different than if you grew up in a family where you're, you know, biologically, you know, there, and then find out you have a twin, which has happened to people. There's a wonderful kind of web series on YouTube called featuring this Korean kind of YouTube star named Dan Matthews, I believe, but he goes by AKA Dan. Oh, yeah. And he did a series where he went back to try to find out more about his family, ended up finding out he was a twin, but he and his brother look nothing alike. And his twin grew up in Korea, and then he grew up in the States. So, like, for them, I'm sure that's a really interesting experience as well. And then, of course, there's the Samantha and Anais story, which most people are acquainted with, that when Celine and I tell our stories, that most people are like, oh, it's like the Twinsters movie, or it's like those Korean girls. Like, I mean, for us, I guess it is more similar to that. And I think because we are adults now, I think meeting at the age that we're meeting, it's a very different experience than it would have been, say, if we had met, or if this had happened at an age where the potentiality for us to grow up together was still there. Because that's the one thing that always fascinated me about the story about the two girls, I guess the Scandinavian girl and the American girl, is that their parents knew, and they grew up separately, but they knew they were related from a very young age, you know, because they, I mean, you know, I think the in the film, it shows them figuring this all out when they were maybe 9 or 10, some, you know, relatively young. And so I think for me, that would have created a different set of, like, feelings and concerns, because we didn't have that chance, in a sense, to grow up together and to share that, the growing up experience, because we didn't know until now. And so for us, embarking on this journey is a lot, like I said before, it's a lot more like making a friend.
Do you regret that you didn't know earlier, or do you think that would have been, like, scary to suddenly have this sibling who you have to maybe share things with? Or, I mean, if you think about it, have you ever thought, well, it's too bad we couldn't have actually grown up together? Or is that just doesn't really, you don't do a lot of what ifs?
I don't really think about that. I think I'm glad we met, not necessarily the way we met, but at least the time that we met. I think that perhaps, at least for me and my mom, like, this has been the easiest way, because had we met younger, under whatever circumstances that might have been, for our parents, I'm sure that would have been like, how are we gonna, like, what are we going to do? Like, they're, like, related, but, like, we don't really know each other, but I guess that they should hang out because they're related. Like, you know, I feel like we haven't had that, because we're kind of choosing how this relationship goes on our own terms. And it's been how we want it to be. Like, as much as our parents have, like, and I guess family, friends have, like, been a part of the journey with us, like, we have had the opportunity to really determine how this thing plays out. And so I think that's been a great thing, that it hasn't been left in the hands of others, that we have kind of the agency to figure it out. But
I mean, I kind of feel like you covered it. Yeah, I think that, especially to the last point, like, I think it's definitely a different experience, you know, meeting post-college as opposed to any time prior to that. I think in some ways we've been really lucky. We were able to sort of form our distinct identities. And then now we get to meet each other as sort of mostly fully formed humans. Or I'd like to pretend to be a, you know, semi-responsible pseudo-adult. But yeah.
Oh, it's cracked up.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've never actually thought about what it would have been like if we'd met earlier just because we didn't. I think it's funny, I think a lot of times everyone else brings that kind of thing up. There's all this almost like, I don't know, proxy emotional baggage that has gone along with this journey.
What do you mean by that?
I guess I mean like sort of what we were saying before when, you know, sometimes when people hear our story, like they start crying or they tell, I've told coworkers the story and they've told me that they've told their friends who started crying. And it's like, I've never cried about this. Like, you know, and I don't really know how to respond when people share that kind of thing with me. They're like, yeah. And then I told it at this like party and then people were crying and I'm like, okay, it's my life. I don't know why they're crying. It's not sad either. Like, but I mean, I guess just sort of the emotional impact that this has had on people I have never met, like, you know, coworkers, friends, like I don't even know, you know, some of my coworkers that well, you know, I see them every day in the office, but we're not like super close on a sort of personal level. So there's sort of all of this almost like anxiety that I guess other people feel like about adoption or about family relations or siblings or something that seems to come out when they hear this story that I guess I've just not experienced myself, and it's kind of weird. But I guess, and now I have people, you know, one of my coworkers is actually a twin, and she was like, oh my gosh, I heard your story. Like, I'm a twin. Like, that I'm so happy for you. Like, I can't even imagine what it must be like. And I get it from her perspective because she can't imagine not having grown up with her twin sister. But to me, I grew up without any siblings, and now I found out I have a twin sister. And so I guess that potential for loss doesn't resonate with me in the same way. I think for a lot of people who have grown up with siblings, the idea is kind of scary. Like the idea that they wouldn't have grown up with these people that they love so dearly and that they've spent so much time with and bonded with and who are so, you know, critical to their life experience. But having grown up as an only child, especially, I guess it's not something I ever really thought about because I never had to confront it until now. And yeah, it's just been kind of interesting to see how emotional other people have been about this whole process.
It sounds like what you're both saying is that there are assumptions about this experience, mm-hmm. external assumptions, that don't necessarily resonate. I mean, have either of you felt a loss, a kind of primal feeling of loss about the fact that you were taken out of your home country, didn't grow up in China, though you were born there? Has that ever felt like a loss to you?
I think a lot of, I mean, I've read a lot of adoption literature, as I'm sure Selena has too. And I've read, you know, perspectives from, you know, adoptive parents, and I've read stories from, I guess, mothers who did give up their children for adoption in China, mm-hmm. and other things. And I think the thing for us that makes, and I know Selena touched on it earlier, was the fact that we were adopted so young that we don't have memories prior to being adopted. So our memories are only of our adopted families. And so we can't, in a way, we don't have that sensibility to having lost something, because for us, it is as though we didn't lose anything because we didn't know any different. I do know people who've been adopted who were adopted older, and they do have memories of, you know, their families or of the orphanage or whatever. And so for them, there is that sense of loss because there were people that they can remember and there were connections that they did lose in the process of moving to a different country and all of that. But I think for us, it's definitely been more of a, our experience of our lives as they are is exactly the way I would imagine it is for anyone who grows up in the family they were born in and grew up in, because we don't remember anything before that. And so I think for me, I have thought about this. I don't feel a particular sense of loss in terms of myself or us not knowing each other before now, or, oh, like, I wonder, like, you know, of course I've like thought about it, like I've lived in China, so I have an idea like, oh, my life would have been different probably in these ways had I grown up in this country and not in the US. But I think I do have an interest and perhaps a concern for parents who have given up their children for what, for the reasons that they have. And because although I don't experience loss in that way, I, having read stories and met people who've done it, I know that for them it is a very, like, it is a very searing kind of, like you were saying, like a visceral kind of pain that I probably wouldn't ever understand. Like, even if Selena and I were to someday meet our birth parents, I don't think that we would ever be able to understand what that would be like for a parent, you know. And then I mean, actually, I think the people who can most relate to that experience is not us, it's people who've lost their children for whatever reason, due to sickness or accident or tragedy. Like, those are the parents, those are the people who know the most what it's like to have given up, you know, their children. And I was reading an article written by this girl that a friend of mine who's also adopted sent to me. She was talking about her experience going back to China and trying, in a way, to find her family, but I think in a way also just to kind of understand what it's like. And she talked about, wrote about how she's met all of these parents who, they see her and they talk to her, and even though they know she's not their actual, like, child, like, they want to be assured that what they did was right, that the life that, you know, for the parents who gave up their children because they felt that they could not provide them the life they wanted them to have, that their children are okay, that that was the right choice in the end, that they gave them, you know, a different life than what they would have had had they stayed in China. And she said for her, that was an incredibly, like, moving experience to have these parents, like, you know, and to be able to talk to them and be like, you know, like, I'm okay, like, you know, like, I'm, like, you know, like, I'm happy. You don't have to worry that I'm, like, not okay. And so I think for me, like, that, if anything, that would be my hope, that if we were to ever meet, like, our birth parents, like, I don't have a need to meet them for, I mean, it would be interesting to know, like, how everything did go down, but I think ultimately for me, like, that is my one, like, wish that I would want to be able to give them, is that they would know that, like, I'm fine. Like, I like, I've had a great life, and, you know, I don't, like, I'm not upset with them. Like, there's no, like, I guess, resentment or anger towards them for what happened, but that, you know, I wish them well, and that, you know, maybe one of these days it'll happen. Maybe it won't. Maybe we'll find some other sibling we have. We've joked that, you know, what if we're triplets? Like, who knows? It could happen. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that, you know, as has been mentioned a couple times, you know, just not having prior memories you don't know what you lose if you don't know you have it. And so I think, yeah, I haven't really experienced that. Also through, you know, things that have been written by other people, just hearing more the birth parent experience. You know, I think they're the ones who ultimately have those feelings, probably experience that most acutely, of course, because they were cognizant of what was going on when their babies were not yet able to understand the situation. And I think that, yeah, that would also probably be what I would want them to know if we ever, you know, manage to randomly bump into them or miraculously find them or whatever it is, you know, that everything's okay and that, you know, I'm just, you know, I think having grown up here, especially, like, just, you know, there's a lot to be grateful for. And I think, you know, especially when I went back to visit the orphanage in 2000, like, you know, there were some children there who had never been adopted, who were much older. And you sort of realize, like, you know, that could have been me. And, you know, what happens to them then? Because in China, you know, so much has to do with, like, where you come from, who your ancestors are, like, what family you belong to. And by not really belonging to a family, you're sort of without identity. And so having been adopted, we've been sort of spared that. And so I just feel really lucky, you know, most of the time. So there isn't really a loss. It's more just like feeling grateful for, you know, being where I am. And obviously, you know, finding Sarah, that's cool too.
So let me ask you both to wrap up how you envision this, how this relationship moves forward is for you two to decide. How is it moving forward? How have you done this? How are you doing this? How have you discovered you're alike and how have you discovered you're different?
I feel like it's been a lot like the way a lot of my friendships have been with people since college, because it's definitely a different experience than being in an environment where you can see the other person like 24/7 because you literally occupy the same like square mile like all the time. But it's been cool. I mean, I definitely like put a lot of thought into moving here once we figured out that we were twins, because I mean, obviously the work that I'm doing is what I am passionate about. I mean, teaching is something that I think is incredibly important, but the opportunity to do it here where we could also hang out was, you know, a huge thing for me. And I don't think we have a plan. There's not much of a game plan in terms of like how we're going to work this out. I think we're going to kind of just play it by ear, wait it out, see, you know, when we're both free to do things, we do them, you know. Of course, now that we know we're twins, I mean, we've celebrated our first annual twin day, which is when we jointly celebrate our birthday since we don't have the same birthday. And so that I'm sure will continue. But beyond that, I guess only time will tell. But in terms of figuring out how we're alike and how we're different, I feel like for the most part, we discover similarities more than differences, just because I think for whatever reason, it's more striking when there's similarities, because I think, again, with what you were saying about the whole twin thing, I think twins in pop culture and just the idea of twins for a lot of people evokes a certain like experience. You know, most people will reference The Parent Trap or Mary-Kate and Ashley or I don't know, like various other like these kind of icons of twinness, I guess, in our society. And I mean, for us, I mean, the whole Parent Trap thing, I mean, we joked about it like at the beginning because it did kind of have that, and we didn't meet at summer camp, but while fencing, but, or after having kind of like a war or whatever, but that was the kind of giddy sense, I think, of like, oh, wow, like, we could prank people. This could be funny, like, you know. But, I mean, I think even from our first conversation when we Skyped, even though like we said, it was incredibly awkward, and we were asking the most ridiculous basic questions, like, so what's your favorite color? Like, you know, we discovered a lot of things that to most people, it's like, oh, cool, you have the same, like, favorite food or the same favorite color. But for us, in a weird way, it makes it funnier and also, like, more interesting. Like, we both, you know, are incredible nerds in terms of, like, lots of things. But we both have a great affinity for all things Lord of the Rings. And we both, like, have a great desire to go see the wonderful country of New Zealand because of that. And, you know, we, as we've mentioned multiple times, you know, food is something that we bond over on a regular basis. And kind of our non-conformity to, I guess, a lot of the Asian stereotypes because of the way we grew up, I think, is also part of that. Also, like Selena said earlier, we had an incredibly similar growing up experience, despite the fact I grew up in, you know, suburban South, and she grew up in, you know, the great city of New York. Like, you know, we both grew up as only children. We both went to K through 12 schools. We both traveled to Israel. Like, we've both been back to China. We both have similar bent in terms of, like, the kinds of work we do. And so I think in a lot of ways that has made this process easier for us, because bonding over things you have in common is how most people, you know, like, begin their friendships or their relationships. And so for us, that's made it really easy because we have a lot of things in common. I mean, of course, there's differences too. That's the other thing that I like to stress to people about twins, is that we are not, like, clones of each other, you know? Like, just because, you know, we have the same DNA and, like, things like that does not mean that if I think something, she automatically thinks it also. Like, I don't know why people think that we have this, like, ability to telepathically communicate. Although, I mean, granted, like, we do think similarly, so sometimes we do tend to say things the same way at the same time. But, you know, people who have best friends do that too. It's not, like, that's unique to the twin experience or anything. And, but it does make for, I think, a lot funnier interactions and reactions, especially from other people. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for what's to come, whatever it may be. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun figuring it out. And I mean, hey, we have a great fun story to tell our kids one day. Like, you know, and if anything else, I think one of the things that for me, being adopted in the whole experience, and then of course meeting Selena now, is something that I've all, like, I enjoy talking to parents of, you know, younger adoptees or even other adoptees. I actually have yet to really meet a lot of adoptees who are close enough in age to really have a kind of a deeper conversation about what it means to be adopted and what it looks like and what it can look like or doesn't necessarily have to look like. But I mean, now it's definitely been an opportunity to share with parents too. Like, hey, like, something like this could happen. It doesn't have to be a scary thing. Like, it can be, I know for some parents, it is a scary thing to think that, oh my goodness, like, if my child were to reconnect with their past, like, it doesn't mean that we love you less. It doesn't mean that, like, we're going to be like, oh, well, see you later. Like, I have this, like, I'm going to, like, jump ship and, like, go back to this other, like, identity. It's just part of, you know, I guess the evolving story of, like, who we are and, you know, what it can look like.
Yeah, I think that one of the cool things about being sort of first wave adoptee is that, you know, so many other Chinese adoptees are so much younger, like, you know. And I think that, you know, the best thing that we can do is just to stay positive about the whole experience and just, you know, if there are adoptees who feel, you know, some sort of identity crisis that, you know, I guess we didn't really experience, like, you'll be okay. There are people like you who got through it. And I think just having those older role models is really important.
I think, and this is something that I feel like as adoption is becoming, like, more common, it's being researched more, that perhaps people in general in society will come to understand better. But it's the fact that for some reason, I feel like people bring it up sometimes in very odd ways. And I'm like, wait, I'm adopted? Like, shocker. I did not know. Thank you for pointing it out to me again, that my last name is not Asian sounding. I know. Hate to break it to you, but yeah. You know, like things like that where like people don't mean anything by it. They're not trying to like, but I still feel like in a way adoption and being adopted still has this weird sort of like mystique to it that people aren't sure how to deal with because, and understandably so, I think for some people, like, you know, we are very open about the fact that we're adopted and very comfortable with that idea. I know other people are not as, so people are trying to be sensitive to it. But I know when I was in China, for example, like, and I don't know what it's like now, like holistically, but in my experience being someone who is adopted in China, when I was there, you know, it's not something people want to talk about. I know for a lot of Chinese people, it's a very sensitive topic. There's a sense of like, it kind of goes both ways. Like Selena was saying, either that people feel like, oh my goodness, this is a very like sensitive and like shameful topic, we should not discuss this. Or people are really like, oh my gosh, you're so lucky, you grew up in America. Like, oh my goodness, America. Like, you know, the whole like weird, like America is like, you know, the only place people get adopted to, which obviously is not true. There's so many, you know, Chinese children who've been adopted to Australia and Italy and Scandinavia and, yeah, the Netherlands is a huge one. Canada, like, you know, and I'm and within China even now it's becoming more common for inter-country, you know, and, like, I think that, you know, it's more easy to point out because we don't look like our parents, but you know, and I think it too, it speaks to like our own personal biases. I mean, I know for myself being adopted, and like Selena was saying, knowing that family doesn't necessarily look a certain way shapes the way that I guess assume things about people in ways that are different from the way other people assume things about people. Like, I know, I remember growing up, like, if I, like, because a lot of my friends, as I said before, were Caucasian, and my mom is Caucasian, and we go out, the initial assumption is always that I'm the friend, and that, you know, my friend is my mom's daughter, and they're not. Or, you know, that, I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been complimented on how excellent my English is. And I'm like, I know, right? I worked so hard to get here. The assumption that because, you know, I am Chinese, that, you know, I will naturally not understand certain things about the way things work in this country or language or things like that. And people don't mean anything by it, but... Or even like Selena was saying, they assume you speak the language. It's like you walk into a Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Thai, Filipino restaurant, and then all of a sudden it's like people are talking to you and you're just like, I wish I knew what you were saying, but I don't. So we're going to need to speak English because I don't know what's going on. And it's a natural thing to do. And I actually realized that having learned Chinese, it's something that I – and more accepting of, I guess, in terms of Chinese. And it's something that I'm more willing to step out in now that I can somewhat speak Chinese, kind of, you know, and initiate conversations in Mandarin. But I definitely think it's something that even now, like, you know, in the media, like the race, I mean, I feel like race in America is never going to go away. It's never going to be a topic that isn't, you know, wrestled with for, you know, historical reasons and just because of the way, the way things are, the way I think people are, just, you know, in the way that we like to compartmentalize things. But I think I say all of this to say, you know, to, you know, other adoptees out there that you're not alone. Like, when people read your name and then they're, like, confused because your name doesn't match your face or... you know, you order something and they try to spell it in a weird way because they think that, like, oh, there, it's not possible that your name would be what it is because you don't look like that. So I need to try to spell it in a way that conforms to, like, the identity that I think you have or whatever, that it's okay. And that, you know, it's not a conversation you have to have with people if you don't want to have that conversation. You're not, like, representative of all adoptees. And so when you tell your story, you know, it is your story and you can tell it the way you want to tell it and you can share the parts you want to share and you don't have to share things you don't want to share. And you don't owe anyone that. Like, other people aren't entitled to know things. And so don't feel that pressure that, like, oh my goodness, like, my story has to be a certain way because, you know, that's what's expected of me, or, you know, I need to present a certain way because, like Selena was saying, you have to be the trauma victim, or you have to, or if you are feeling like conflicting feelings about it, that you have to have it all together and that, oh no, like, I'm fine, like, I have to keep up this front because, you know, if I don't, then whatever, like, people are going to think a certain thing. That no, like, your story is your own story just as much as anyone's story is their own story. And, you know, it's your story. So make it your own. Don't, like, try to make it something that it's not. But, you know, if you want to explore your birth country and you want to go back and try to find pieces of, you know, your past, like, that's your, you know, your choice too. And that, you know, there's no shame in, like, wanting to find those parts of yourself that pick up those lost threads, because I think there's something valuable there too. And just because it's something that, you know, I haven't necessarily chosen or Selena hasn't necessarily chosen, you know, a lot of other adoptees have chosen that and they've, you know, found meaning in that too. So encouragement to all the adoptees out there that it's a journey, but everyone's life is a journey. So enjoy it